Helium Talk, ein Kunstpodcast von Melvin Giebeke und Jörg Heikhaus. Special Edition, Landpartie.
So Peter, the question I ask everyone in this podcast special for the Landpartie is, what was your first thought when I contacted you and asked you if you want to do an exhibition in the remote countryside of Schleswig-Holstein in the north of Germany in a tiny village?
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts?
My initial thought was like, what is this? You know, what the fuck are we doing? But then also my thought is that I know you. I know your history. I know what you did with Helium Cowboy. Mm-hmm. I'm quite a nerd about all this street art-ish, what mm-hmm. you want to call it. So I also know when you do something that, I'm going to trust it's going to be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually funny because everyone I asked was like, yes, I'd like to do that. And it's a concept that you don't really can understand if you haven't been there. And we just came from the location. You were here to deliver your artworks. Mm-hmm. And you've just been to the Kneipe, the former Gasthof yeah. here in the village. And it's kind of different to an exhibition hall, right?
What a different place. Yeah. We drove here with a trailer on our car, taking the small roads here, you know, and at some certain point, you don't have any choice to take the small roads because that's what it is. But what a beautiful place, you know, what a nice place to do this. And, I didn't expect that you have such a great rooms, you know. You saw this small house from the outside, it looks small. And when you enter, I can see like, okay, I can see the potential and why you want to do it in there, you know.
It goes on and on, you know, you come through the smaller entrance and then
it kind of opens up. I know you, we don't know each other that much. Let's hope we can know each other better soon. But I know of you and I know when you do something, I definitely want to participate in that, you know.
A joint show is always a good start.
So definitely. So yeah, thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Yeah. I'm happy you said yes. You know, it was I was trying to get together a group that. I mean, I'm not a gallerist anymore, but I of course, if you curate like a show like this, you want that it kind of works and that it's still different enough and there's still enough friction mm-hmm. going from artist to artist. And I just thought about this group that it would fit together now that you see all the work in there. Now you brought the work of Lolita as well. So now everything is there. And I think it's going to be, it's going to be a pretty solid exhibition.
Definitely. Yeah. And also, an artist like Lolita, I didn't know her. She's Ukrainian, but lives in Denmark, you know, and actually, I didn't know.
Lithuanian.
I thought it was Ukrainian, but yeah, whatever I was about to say, but she lives in Denmark, and I discovered her art through you, and she delivered the stuff at my place, so I can take it here, and of course, I couldn't help myself but opening the paintings, mm-hmm. Looking, what is it, inside this pack, and wow, what an artist, you know. The brush stroke she did, and then I started to look her up, and I saw actually, oh, she's also in a Danish gallery that I also used to work with, you know, and so for me also, learning about a different artist and seeing somebody, discovering somebody that I actually feel like, why the fuck didn't I know her, of her, you know, that's also part of this, I feel, so, and I feel, even though us artists in this group are so different, you know, in the expression that we do. Definitely, I can see some similarities also, you know, and why you want to bring us together, you know, seeing Rasmus Finhak's mm-hmm. really graphic window paintings, you know, I can see some of that graphic shapes in my tree paintings as well,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then underneath my tree paintings, I have this organic shapes and drippy paint and, you know, rough shit, you know, and I can see that in your paintings as well, and I can mm-hmm. actually see that in Lolita's paintings as well, you know, because she also has some rough organic brush strokes, you know, so there's tiny drips mm-hmm. in all of these artworks, you know, that I feel like that's why they fit together. Maybe we know that because we kind of nerds.
Yeah.
The viewers coming to see this, they don't know this exact stuff, but they get the feeling.
Yeah, still, yeah, that's always like the experiment, you know, yeah, to see if your idea that you have with bringing artists together will also be picked up by the people that are coming to the show. So, so now we talked about all the other artists almost. Let's talk about you. So you have a big space in Aarhus. You work there as well. You're a painter, but you're also, or probably mainly, a graffiti artist.
I come from graffiti. Yeah.
So maybe tell me a little bit about how you became the artist that you are today.
Let me say something. Let's go way back then. I always was drawing and painting. Yeah. Since I could have a fucking crayon in my hand, I was drawing and painting. I was this kid that was kind of wild in school. Mm-hmm. So my teachers and my parents, they couldn't really, you know, get me to like, sit still, Peter, you know, can you fucking stop going on adventures and can you sit still, you know? And when they gave me a fucking crayon or a brush or something, then I could fucking sit still, you know? So I've always been encouraged to paint, you know, and I still have that feeling. I have 200 thoughts going through my head all the fucking time. But once the brush hits the canvas, then I only think about one thing, you know. So for me, that's fucking so important, you know, and that's also probably why I cannot stop painting 10 hours a day, every day, you know. But then when I was fucking 10 years old, I discovered graffiti. I always been drawing monsters and soldiers and what you do as a kid, you know, superheroes and stuff. But then an older boy from school, he'd just been to London. I also live in a small city, actually, Hedensted in Denmark, it's called. It's a fucking small city. We had no graffiti in the mid-90s when I was there, you know. You could play football, you could go to play some PlayStation in the club or something. I didn't want to do anything about that. Then he was in London and he bought this graffiti magazine in London. And he said to me, Peter, you can have this magazine. This is all over fucking London, on the trains, on the walls, on all. And I opened this magazine and it was like fucking lightning hit me. You know, like if it was a cartoon, you could see this light bulb going up, you know, here. From that point on, I didn't care about soldiers or superheroes. I wanted to do letters. Graffiti letters and go on adventure and be creative and do something that looked nice, but I could also do it without sitting still, you know, I could run around doing stuff. So I was fucking caught up in that, you know, and when I was 16 years old, I moved away from my family. I started fucking around, you know, in Europe. I'd already made some friends in Aarhus and they knew somebody in Copenhagen and I've been painting all over. I was like, you know, it was the only thing that I thought about, and
like a graffiti nomad.
Exactly, and it was when I was 16 years old. I started traveling around. You know, I had a guy in Holland, nice friend that I still know. He could make fake Interrail tickets for us. You know, so we could fuck around on free tickets all over Europe and just steal stuff and paint all over. You know, sleep on the streets, sleep in fucking abandoned buildings in Berlin. At this time, there was a lot more abandoned buildings in Berlin, you know, before this gentrifying stuff, you know. So basically, that's all that I did, you know, from when I was 10 years old and 15 years forward. That was the only thing I did. Letters on walls and trains, but I did it all the fucking time. And I got a name also, and I spent more than 3 years in prison for this shit, you know, only for graffiti. Not violence, not drugs, anything. I spent more than 3 years in my youth in different jails. I've been in 6 different jails in Denmark, you know. I've been in all the hardest jails. I've been Vesterfængsel, that is the most brutal fængsel in prison in Denmark, you know. I've been all over, and I didn't want to stop, you know. Because I was fucking possessed by this shit.
You know? Crazy that you can get to prison, go to prison for graffiti.
Right? Yeah. You know? And you know what? One time I was in prison, I got 14-month sentence, you know? I was in Vesta in the crazy... they just take you to this jail. You have to be in there for a certain time before going to court, you know? And my neighbors were murderers and gang members and all this. And then I got sentenced to 14 months in a jail in Møllekær, it's called. It was close to where my parents lived, actually, in Jutland, you know. I came into that prison, and not long after, the bosses of the prison came to my cell, and I was like, hey, You know, when you were in a prison, you don't talk to these fuckers. You don't talk to the guards. You don't talk to these because they're fuckers. You know, that's not my idea. It's just the law of the prison. Mm-hmm. You know, but they came to my cell and said, "Hey, Peter, we need to hear this. We need to give you some." And they were like, "We heard that you do graffiti. We have a gym inside our prison. Mm-hmm. Can you do some graffiti there for us? You know, we'll pay you for it. You know, we get some cans inside." And I was like, "Yeah, of course, I wanted to do this." And then I spent like 2 weeks doing a fucking mural in there that would normally take me half a day or something. You know, just to do it. So apparently, this crime of graffiti, somebody could also see some good in this. I don't think that the guys selling drugs or something, that the prison bosses would like ask them to do that, you know, inside. So apparently somebody saw something in me, you know. Mm-hmm. In this prison, they built a fucking church. Normally they have churches in prisons. This is just a small room. Yes, you know? Yeah. They have mosques also, like small room. But they built a fucking, like a real church inside with a giant tower, a bell, like this place you can get baptized and all this shit, you know. And because I did this mural, they asked me if I wanted to help build this church. It was not, it was some regular workers, but it was also inmates who built this prison, church.
Church, yeah.
Yeah, so I was at that project in 14 months, and the minister of the church, she was 32 years old. For me, that was, I was young at that time, but she was a young minister in that church. She actually asked if she could take me out of the prison and help do the mosaics for the windows and stuff like this with an artist that lived like 45 minutes in a car away or something like that. So I spent a month or something like that with this fucking lady living inside a studio in Vejle, like close to this place, building mosaic windows and I don't know what you call it in English, but the place that you get baptized, you know,
like a basin, you know.
Basin, you have water inside. But it was also made of mosaics, you know.
Okay.
So I started to think about like, it's also fun to do other stuff than letters, you know. And that's where my mind started to change a little bit. Not because of this minister, not because of, but because of just discovered that, okay, maybe somebody can also see, because I always felt like just a criminal.
Yeah.
But at certain point, somebody could see something of value in what I did, you know. And that started the first, like, spark inside of me that maybe I also can do something else than letters. Maybe that's also fun in some sort of way.
So that's where your style comes from, that you're basically applying today to your work with the mosaics, with the squares, with the, it's a geometrical base to your work.
It is. It's graphic shapes, you know. Mm-hmm. When you do graffiti, it's not just like a scribbly whatever. Graffiti is shapes in colors with outlines on, you know, you design a letter, like somebody design a vase or something like that. It's the same when you design a graffiti letter. If you just change one angle, it means the whole world, you know. Mm. So that's what I did, and that also fits the mosaic, you know.
Yeah,
graphic shapes in different colors, and that's also what I now, like 20 years later, use in my paintings. Mm. I really try to, all the time, honor my graffiti background, you know. Everything that I know of shapes, colors, forms, working hard, believe in yourself, all that shit you need to have as an artist, I know from graffiti culture.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing I did, you know.
But isn't it weird now that you are invited to, or organizing yourself, large outdoor events where you paint half the city illegally and not getting thrown into jail for that? And people really appreciate it now. So like there was a quite a long development from getting to everybody trying, from the criminalization of graffiti to now being an accepted art form.
Yeah, definitely. And also the culture and the way people perceive this culture changed a lot, you know.
Yeah.
When I was really active in let's say from the mid 90s up until 2010, that was I was really active. People was seeing in Denmark, of course, mm-hmm. graffiti as like the devil's fucking work, you know. Like you couldn't get accepted anywhere. I know that if you lived in Berlin, you can say that started before. But in Denmark, you know, it was like the devil's work. My parents were so fucking not even angry. They were disappointed about me, mm-hmm. you know, because this graffiti shit, you know, it's like you can. It was the same as I was selling drugs or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I remember when it started.
Now, yeah. Like, I can meet old people that say, "Hey, you do graffiti? How exciting! What is it that you do? Can I see your sketches? What is your Instagram?" It all changed, you know.
Yeah.
So I was also lucky to live in that time, you know.
Yeah, and to bring the experience with you to develop your work now. You
exactly. Know? Mm. Exactly. And I still do graffiti, but I'm not obsessed of it like I was. I'm right now obsessed of doing art. Mm-hmm. So that way of doing stuff, that when I did graffiti, it took over my entire brain. Like everything in life is about this. Mm-hmm. I could not have a job because I do graffiti full time, you know. So that's the same way I do art now. I cannot do anything like half-ass, and it's mm-hmm. almost unhealthy. It's not almost, it is unhealthy, you know, in some sort of way. But I am obsessed of this shit, you know. I paint 12 hours every day. I cannot stop it, you know. I love it so much. That's also something that graffiti started in me, you know.
Yeah, and then, it sounds like a lot of energy.
Yeah, and then I miss out of I don't have any kids, you know, I'm 40 years old, so I don't have any kids, I don't have a wife, I have a nice life, it's not like that, I have a good social life and I love it, but still I also miss out on some stuff. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, and I'm starting to think about that now because I'm a little older, but I don't know how to fucking stop it. I don't know how to change it, you know.
Well, I mean, my humble opinion, you shouldn't change it or you shouldn't stop it. You can change things, but you shouldn't stop it, because I think that's the part that makes your work so intense and special. Mm. I always admire artists that actually are driven like you, because it's what brings out these expressions that you're putting onto canvases or sculptures. Mm. And you had this big exhibition in Aarhus now, where you basically, I saw, because you're also good at documenting the stuff, I saw in one of the videos where you took the beams from the scaffolding and a tape and wrapping the tape around it to make it colorful. Everybody else would probably just go and spray paint it because it goes faster, but you take like a duct tape and a colored duct tape and you tape it. And I'm pretty sure if you look up close, it's perfectly taped and not, you know.
Yeah, but it still looks nice.
And yeah, it's beautiful.
But it's also like about this. I used a lot of time telling people that I'm not just a graffiti writer, you know. I can also do other stuff, you know. I used a lot of time on that shit. This exhibition was about the opposite. It was about like honoring where I came from and telling people, hey man, I'm here because of that fucking culture, you know. Mm-hmm. I stand on the shoulders of other people that taught me stuff, you know, and that's also why I like bringing in this, like taking this nice, beautiful white gallery and then taking all this shit that belongs in a building site and put it inside, you know, say, hey man, scaffoldings, that's what I use when I do big walls, you know. That's what I use to fucking climb in Berlin to do rooftop graffiti pieces. I love fucking scaffolding. It's like
it's a pretty good valuable stage or entry point to go to the places where you illegally painted, you know. So you probably were really happy to see nice buildings that are in scaffolding.
I love it. I feel that's beautiful. Scaffoldings are fucking beautiful, you know. So I think most people would say it's like ugly, get that shit away from my building, but I there's something about it, you know. I'll
put some links in the show notes to see the work, especially from that exhibition. But you in Aarhus, you have this, it always looks like a large complex, this Galerie Grisk, and then there's a shop inside and tattoo and your studio is quite large, and everything you seem to do, and now at least, is it looks like big, you know, like on a big scale. So tell me about how it got to this gallery Grisk, because it's not a gallery. It's more like a cultural center.
Exactly. Co-working space for different people. You know, you never know what the fuck happens because we have so many nice people doing projects that it just evolves, you know, like a living organism or something like that. I don't have a 3 years plan or anything like that. We stumbled upon a empty shop in Aarhus. It was a small place, 40 square meters. Mm-hmm. At this time, I was still in jail, actually. When we opened Grisk, I had this weekend out of jail, you know, and then I had to go back. But our friend had this place, you know. It was a shop of watches, you know. And he imported hash to Denmark, a lot of fucking hash all the time. And he got caught with half a ton of hash. So he had to go to jail for some years, you know. Yeah. And then this shop was like, hey, we take over your shop, you know. And that's also saying something about my network at this time. You know, it was 2009. Yeah. We took over the shop. And what are we going to do? We're just going to do a gallery. We know some graffiti art. And that evolved, you know. We had inside, our neighbor was DJ, actually a famous Danish DJ. And his musician friends and our graffiti friends, we just started to, like... go to each other's places, and at a certain point, we just made a fucking door in the wall for his. And then I saw, like, okay, it works so nice to have different creative people at one place, you know. And from that, it just evolved. That was 2009. Mm-hmm. It just evolved and evolved. And now we have, like, I don't know, 2,000 square meters or something like this in the middle of Aarhus, and a lot of good people. Mm-hmm. And that's also because I'm a creative guy. I'm good at starting projects, you know, and getting people to be involved and think this stuff is nice. But then also you need to have some people who can organize stuff and who can do all the paperwork and who can. So I'm so lucky that I have all these people now. And that's the only reason this can happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's...
In Gallery Grisk, which is part of this big organization, we have this called Gallery Grisk, who is not a gallery, but we are like a street art gallery, works outside doing festivals, big murals, all this show. I have a partner, we are 50-50 in this, his name is Per, and Per is like the opposite of me, you know, he's calm, and he has a good network of business people in foundations, and he knows how to do the paperwork, the selling stuff, the promotion stuff, like all this shit, you know, and then I know all the creative stuff, and I feel like that's the only reason that this shit can happen.
Can work,
We're dependent on each other, you know? And then this now is my fucking family. These people working in this place is, we have tattoo artists, we have clothing designers, we have people who organize parties, we have, and so. Mm-hmm. And many of these people has been there for years, you know, for this tattooer Dan, he's been there for 12 years, you know, he was raised, he's a refugee, you know, he was fucking raised in a refugee camp, you know, they didn't have a bed for him, so he slept in the bathtub, you know, when he was small, and he never had any fucking work, you know, the Aarhus municipality supported him with money forever, you know, and they just came with him when he was 20 years old, came and say, can you take this guy, you know, we don't know what the fuck, we pay his salary, just take him, you know, normally you could have this for 3 months in Denmark, we had this guy for 3 years, free because of these, now it's like 12, 13 years later, this guy is fucking a grown-up tattoo artist that makes fucking bucks, you know, and know how to work, he has now 3
employees?
Not even employees, like
places. Like
no, he has 3 younger guys that he's teaching now.
Oh, okay.
You know, and like I can tell you when his mom visits us, you know, she's so fucking happy and says thank you guys because you and that's the spirit of Grisk, you know, we're like a fucking family, you know, at our place, and it's not a swing door that you just enter and go. If you come inside, you're fucking part of this family, you know.
Yeah,
and that's what I really like.
Sounds like a really good place. I think is creative spaces like that are rare, you know.
Yeah.
Aarhus is a pretty well-known city in Denmark, mostly outside of Denmark because of the museum.
Yeah.
and the art. I actually met the director of the museum once in Hamburg. Oh, well, not probably not the current one, but it's a couple of years ago.
The older one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Erland is his name.
Yeah, probably. We just had a few beers. He was a nice guy. Yeah, he was in my studio, and we were just talking about in my studio while everybody else was talking about the show we were talking about.
He had like a Me Too case on him, okay. So that's why he's not there anymore. Like, now it's a little. But he's nice. And it's a fantastic museum.
Yeah, the museum
it's
is
a fantastic
great.
Museum. Yeah, it is, and Aarhus is. Actually a pretty nice city, even though it's a small city. It's just compared to the size, there's a lot of culture. Mm-hmm. But I also must say that what inspired me to do a creative space like this was nothing that I saw. I lived in one in Berlin, you know.
Yeah.
Slept on the floor in a music studio. And I saw this, you know, this way of working together, different creative people who could do stuff working together. So that's the inspiration for me, was all this traveling that I did and, you know, all these people that I met when doing graffiti and all this stuff, you know. So, yeah.
It's a network.
Yeah, it's a network. Exactly.
Yeah. And what do we, you have, as we just mentioned earlier, you've delivered your artwork, one, the largest painting in the exhibition, 250 by 160 or so.
Floor to ceiling.
Yeah, floor to ceiling. And, you know, even it's a kind of bigger space, but it, you know, it wouldn't fit in the rooms in Hamburg.
Yeah.
But it's, well, it would fit in floor.
I've got to bring some small ones. But it looks great in there.
It looks great.
It
looks
fits
really
the color
great.
Of the floor.
And also these tiny, you know, pointy sculptures that are going in there.
Yeah.
That's also from your last exhibition.
It is.
And you say it's like trees. Where does the nature come into your work? How did it evolve?
Let me say something else. You know, when we talk about these pointy fuckers, you know, and the graphic trees that I do, and also on top of the trees, I have these signal flags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I do an artwork or an exhibition, I try to bring symbolism into this. I really like that. These are landscape paintings. Landscape paintings, like if you saw them historically, they started as backgrounds for humans. You know, they started as some scene you could put a human inside. But once painters discovered all the symbolism you could put inside of a landscape painting, then all of a sudden the landscape painting started to be like, you know, actually the artwork, you know, and all this symbolism about it could be like where you come from or how is the time right now. There's a lot of symbolism in landscape paintings. That's why I chose to work with landscape paintings in the first time, and then putting these graphic shapes, these signal flags inside, is actually like a reference to where I come from. Signal flags is something that you use. It's an internal language, you can almost say, for people who sail. If a boat from Spain crosses a boat from China and you don't speak the same language, you still have a common language. That's the signal flags. You can signal stuff to each other. You know, you can say, hey, you have danger, or you have a storm coming up, or you should like, whatever, you know, you can signal stuff to each other while passing each other. And I feel like this common language is, it's a global, nice, democratic, anti-racism kind of language. I like that, you know. And when I see graffiti, it's the fucking same, you know. We don't communicate to other people. Like when I do a nice big wall with an artwork on it, then I communicate with like the whole city and people seeing. Graffiti is like we communicate to each other. We don't care about what other people say. So that's kind of something that is like reminiscent of these signal flags.
Yeah.
Then when I also say, okay, signal flags, why are they so graphic and why are they so contrasty in the color? Because you need to see them, you need to read them while passing each other, you know. It's fucking like letters on a train riding by, you know. That's also why graffiti is contrasty and it's like graphic shapes, you know. It's not like organic stuff that just fucks around in each other. It's graphic shapes with outlines on, because you need to see them passing a train in 40 kilometers in an hour on the U-Bahn, you know. You need to fucking read that shit. So these signal flags and graffiti has a lot of stuff in common, I think so. So that's also like a small reminder of where I come from when I put this in the paintings.
Yeah, fascinating. Totally fascinating. Yeah, helpful for me and for Melvin as well to understand this better, so we can translate a little bit.
Of course.
When we have the visitors going through the exhibition. Mm. We said this is going to be a short, quick, fast run through. I have the feeling we could do a podcast with you that probably lasts 3 hours. No one even, probably scratched the surface.
Let's do that maybe one day.
Yeah, I was saying. Maybe, this is to introduce you. This is to have some background for the exhibition that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then when we see each other, probably in Hamburg or here or in ours again, I'll bring these tiny plugs. Definitely. And then we maybe, talk about more detail in your work and your pretty exciting and very criminal background. Peter, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for bringing the work. Thank your friend. Who's his name?
Benjamin.
Benjamin, who drove.
Nice guy, yes.
Who drove the truck?
Yes,
down here, and hopefully we'll see you at the opening or the pre-opening.
Yes,
and
definitely.
Thanks for being here, Peter.
Let's end this by saying also thank you for inviting me. I'm
you're welcome.
I know who you are. You're a fucking legend, and you did so much that I followed your gallery and what you did for years. So I'm just happy and proud that you wanted to be in this show. So thanks you also.
Yeah. All right.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Good one. Yeah. Here, talk.